Welcome to session 67 of the Bible in a Year commentary. If you started this series on the 1st of January, then today should be the 8th of March. Today we'll be looking at Joshua 9 to 12 and Psalm 67. But so far in Joshua, we've read as Joshua has picked up the reins where Moses left off. Joshua is now in charge, and we see God command him to be courageous and loyal to his word. In turn, the Israelites were courageous and faithful to Joshua. Continuing from Deuteronomy, we see this theme of faithfulness and obedience leading to blessing. Joshua sent out spies, just as Moses did, but these spies were successful. God led these spies to a Canaanite woman named Rahab, who sided with them. Upon returning with the news, Joshua then led the people across the River Jordan, just as Moses led the people across the Red Sea. On the other side, Joshua led the people through the practices that God had commanded them, circumcision and Passover. Outside of Jericho, Joshua met the commander of God's army, who reminded Joshua he was part of God's plan, not the other way round. And then the fighting began. Through obedience and faithfulness, God led the people to victory over Jericho. Unfortunately, immediately the people began doing things their own way and were defeated in the next battle against Ai. Joshua reaffirmed the Israelites' obedience and faithfulness by punishing those who rebelled and seeking God for wisdom. The second time round, they defeated Ai. Having learnt their lesson afresh, the Israelites once again committed themselves to their covenant relationship with God. They will be obedient and faithful. But let's jump in with Joshua 9 to 12. Yesterday, we saw Joshua and the Israelites become cocky after a victory and start making decisions without speaking to God first. Today, we see them make the same mistake. The Gibeonites were terrified of Israel, knowing that eventually they would come to destroy them. So they pretend to be from a far-off land so that Israel would make peace with them. Joshua accepted this peace almost straight away, without checking in with God. He realises pretty quickly that the Gibeonites were actually from the towns just down the road, but by that point it was too late. Israel had already committed to peace. Joshua's pride in not bothering to check in with God had once again cost them. But God continues to use this for his purpose. We see five Canaanite kings come together, alarmed by the fact that a group so as powerful as the Gibeonites would allow themselves to become servants to these new Israelites. They band together and attack the Gibeonites in the hope of weakening Israel. Likewise, the Gibeonites turn to Israel for support. But in all this, God says to Joshua that he has given them into Joshua's hands. God throws their enemy into chaos and helps them to destroy them with giant hailstones, killing more than the Israelites could with their swords. Joshua even asked God to stop the sun in the sky so that day would be longer and they could kill more of their enemy. Once again, the Israelites owe their victories completely to God. From here, the fighting really picks up as we read through the rest of the conquest of Canaan. We get a list of all the places in the south of the land that Israel conquered. In this list, the Israelites' obedience is constantly reaffirmed. Battle after battle, they devote everything over to destruction, just as God had commanded them. This is followed by a second list of all the places in the north of the land that Israel had conquered. In this section, the Anakim are again mentioned. Remember, the Anakim are a race of tall men, descendants of Anak. Anak was a Nephilim, a giant. The Nephilim were children of the spiritual beings known as the sons of God, who slept with humans in Genesis 6. That's a lot to take in, so you might want to rewatch the commentaries for Genesis 6 and Deuteronomy 2. Here, the story tells us that all the Anakim, the descendants of one of the Nephilim, were hunted down and removed from the land of Israel. The fact that the writer specifically wants you to know this reinforces the idea that one of the main purposes of this war and conquest was to wipe out the wickedness of the Nephilim and their descendants. The only place they were left with Gaza, Gath and Ashdod. These places are where the Philistines live. As we go forward, the Israelites are going to face a lot of problems with the Philistines, and we're even going to see the occasional giant pop up. Think David and Goliath. Finally, we get a list of kings that Moses defeated and a list of the kings that Joshua defeated. These kings aren't given names. They are just known by the place they were king of. An Israelite reading this would recognise each of the places. But for us, the thing to take away is the huge number of kings defeated. Because of the power of God, this nation of Israel were able to defeat multiple nations and kings, even when they joined together to fight against them. This section also serves to reinforce the unity of the tribes east of the Jordan with those planning to settle west of the Jordan. Land conquered either side of the Jordan is brought together in these lists as it's all part of the same campaign. But that's Joshua 9 to 12. Now let's look at Psalm 67. This falls into the category of praise psalm. Psalm 65 to 68 are often grouped together as a mini cluster. They're all communal praise psalms that talk about we and us. Some argue that this was a thanksgiving psalm recited after a bountiful harvest. Here is a summary of the structure, but I would recommend checking out the written version of this commentary in the description to see the structure properly for yourself. We start off with verse 1, may God bless us. Verse 2, God's power on earth. Verse 3, let all people praise you. Verse 4, the nations. Verse 5, let all people praise you. Verses 6, God's power on earth. And then verse 7, may God bless us. The psalmist opens with a variation of the priestly blessing of Numbers 6, 22 to 27. May God bless us and keep us. The psalmist then turns and speaks directly to God. The reason the psalmist asks for this blessing is that all people might see this blessing and know God's power. It could be that in this, the psalmist has taken the priestly blessing previously reserved for the Israelites and expanding it to fit all people who would turn to God. This theme continues as the psalmist calls for all people to praise God. The nations might be glad as God judges and guides them as well as Israel. And then the psalm starts to mirror itself. Again, the psalmist calls all people to praise God. They point to the great harvest that God has blessed them with and end with confidence that God will continue to bless them so that all people might fear and know him. The focus of this psalm is God's blessing and that one day it will extend beyond Israel to encompass the whole world.